All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and we got a special guest on with us today,
Mr.
Nolan Webster.
Hello.
Hey, Nolan. It's good to have you on here. We'll get into kind of what you do, but I'll say this for the audience before we jump into the beer, and then we'll get back to Nolan. But last week we were talking a little bit after the show, and when we were recording, we're like, you know, it'd be cool if we had like a mentalist on that could teach us some behind the scenes something about business and persuasion and all that kind of stuff. So we put out a request on Help a Reporter Out, and Nolan responded. So
yeah,
that's the tease for the show right there. So we're going to learn a little bit about, well, he's probably not going to tell us anything like really juicy, but you know, who knows? I don't know. But first, before we do that, we're going to jump into talking about our beers, and I've got a beer, Jonathan, that I think you're going to like.
Oh, okay.
Very pop culture as far as the name goes.
Right.
Certainly your style of beer.
Yeah.
And, it's a pop culture 80s reference beer. So,
oh, now we're talking.
Right. So, and film. So it's okay. It's kind of all of the above. So I'll let you go first.
All right.
I threw that out there. That's a double tease. I tease Nolan and I tease my beer. And then we'll find out what Nolan's drinking too. Cause you know, if he's up in Chicago, and you said Nolan, it was 14 degrees. Is that right?
14. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I tell you what, why don't we let our guest go first today? It'd be great. So Nolan, we're going to let you introduce your beverage of choice. And again, we say, you know, sometimes we don't have beer. Sometimes we've been known to have a little whiskey, bourbon.
He's
I was trying to think of the word.
A wee drum.
A wee drum. There we go. But no, you've got a different beverage. So we're going to let you start us off with what you're having today.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not a huge fan of beers, but I do like, you know, rums, tequilas, whiskeys, bourbons. So today, to help stay warm, little Mi Campo tequila.
Oh, nice.
Very nice. Very nice glass, too, by the way. It looks like real crystal.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really, sure, we'll go with that.
It's real. It's absolutely
real glass. Yeah.
You said keep your warm. Share with the audience, those who aren't above the Mason-Dixon, let them know exactly what the temperature is in your neck of the woods today.
Yeah, so this morning I woke up to a -2 degrees.
Awesome.
Right now it warmed up to 14. maybe tomorrow we'll get above freezing, not too sure.
Wow. Yeah, I'm out.
So something that warms you from the inside out, something neat or on the rocks.
Yeah. That's a perfect
choice.
I do like that you drink it neat. I mean, I like that.
Absolutely.
So I'm a neat guy myself on whiskeys and bourbons and scotches and all those things, Baileys.
I've got to the point to where I try to find a rum or tequila that I can mix either in a drink or have it neat.
Yeah, you got to step up a notch. You can't go with, you know, just the bottom shelf stuff if you're going to drink it neat. That's for sure. At least not the first one. Sure. So,
That's
good stuff right there. I think that's our first tequila guest.
Really?
It is. I believe it is.
Yeah, we've had a lot of beers and some waters and some ciders, I think. But you're the first tequila. So, congratulations there.
Thank you. Good job.
Good job.
That's for being
We like to have a little variety. So, it's always good.
It's good. You know?
Yeah.
I think we've had scotch, we've had some bourbon. So, now we've had tequila. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Somebody brought like a seltzer on one time, I remember. That was just wrong.
Very unfortunate.
So
that interview didn't last very long though.
So. Yeah, we had to cut him off. So Jonathan, what do you got?
Well, today I have this is from Mad Tree. It's a Thunder Snow Scottish Ale. So I think I've had one from Mad Tree before, or you have on the show. But this is their Thunder Snow Scottish Ale. So I'm really anxious to love these Scottish ales. It's got a little cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, and vanilla beans. So
wow.
Yeah.
It's like Christmas right there.
Man.
I guess it is Thunder Snow, so it's a very winter winter beer for sure.
That's right.
Man. That's kind of like the full grown St. Nick that I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But yours is an ale instead of a stout.
Oh, it's a really dark. I'm going to hold this up here. See if you can see it. It's nice, dark brown.
Oh, that is dark for an ale.
Yeah, beautiful.
Wow.
So,
anyway. Is that Packawallop? What's the ABV on that sucker? A lot of spices. I don't know.
I think it's like 5.6, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 5.6. No. I'm sorry. I read that wrong. I need to put my reading glasses on.
Yeah, see, I'm doing the same. I'm putting my reading glasses on.
It's 8.5. So,
wow.
A little bit higher there. So,
yeah. Those Scottish ales usually are, though. They're usually pretty strong.
Oh, man. You can taste the cinnamon on that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. I love that. That's the first thing that hits me is the cinnamon.
So,
I like it.
Cool. Well, I've got a brand new brew from, I mean, these guys are here in Austin. They're literally 15 minutes down the road. Mm-hmm. It's called Infamous Brewing, and they've got like a movie reel
on their
bottle. Uh-huh. And the name of this beer, so first of all, it's a peanut butter stout.
Oh,
to go with my Reese's peanut butter cups. And it's called Sweep the Leg. From Cobra Kai.
Oh, really? Is that the name of it?
Sure, I could reference.
Yeah, it's Sweep the Leg is the name of the...
Sweep the Leg.
Infamous Brewing. So apparently they do...
Wait, is there any reference to Cobra Kai on there?
It is, right here.
I on the label. Hold it up again. Let me see. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Now, yeah, and it would on be... The other side is the Mr. Miyagi's tree.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
That's nice.
So...
Have you seen the new commercials with the guy from
the softer Sensei, side?
The softer, so it's now Koala Kai.
Yeah,
because he's much more gentle.
Yes, because he was upset about something before. That's why, right? He was angry about.
That's right.
I don't even know who it's for. So that shows how well the advertising worked. So this is super dark. It's a peanut butter stout. So I cannot find the ABV on it. So I have no idea. I'll have to look it up. At some other point, but
now you said you eat do you drink this with actually, to me, that's a double whammy. If you're having Reese's cup and that, I think you have to have something to offset it. Right.
You think so? Something sweet, like honey or something.
Maybe
banana, maybe banana and peanut butter.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Those, peanut butter. Ooh. So how is it?
That's got a lot. Ooh, that's interesting. It's got a weird finish to it. Mm-hmm. Definitely got the peanut butter. I mean, tastes like a lot of the peanut butter stouts that we've had. Uh-huh. It's got a weird finish to it though. So I think it's one of those that might need to air a little bit and sit.
Okay. All right.
So a lot of these peanut butter stouts get a little better as they air out.
Yeah. So over time, especially if you have a two or three of them, they get better.
Yeah. They get a lot better then. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, Nolan, we are happy to have you on. Just to give our audience a little background, you are a magician and a mentalist. You've done this for over 30 years. So, you have an MBA, and use the techniques of magic to help teach business, marketing, and sales. So this is going to be fascinating. I want to mention your website. People can find you over at NolanWebster.com, and we'll mention that before the end of the show today. So, man, thanks for coming on, and this is going to be fun to talk shop on this topic.
So, we were looking at your website. You got a little tab on there called Business Magic, and so first of all, like, how did you even get to the point where you're like mixing business and magic? Give us a little backstory and how you got to where you are right now.
So, magic's always been a passion. You know, I did my first show in the fourth grade, something I loved doing. And I got my MBA. I did some business consulting on the side. And I wanted to find a way to merge my passion for magic and my love for business and helping businesses. And a while back, I used to be a street performing on the streets of New Orleans and Savannah for money. And I was giving a lecture in California about marketing. And it dawned on me that I could help visualize a product cycle and advertising cycle through my street performing. So everything I do in a 20-minute show is what businesses do for years. Mm-hmm. And then once that clicked, I started doing some more research on how magicians think, the techniques we use, and how that goes hand in hand with businesses as far as marketing, sales, creativity, and things of that nature.
Yeah.
That is very cool. So definitely got to know more about that. So first of all, like, I don't know to put you on the spot here, but is there anything like you can show? Like, most of our listeners are audible, obviously, but we've got some people on YouTube and people can always go watch on the website, the video. Do you have anything visually that kind of, that you, is kind of your go-to on a podcast or a, you know, a quick example of how you tie business and magic or mentalism together?
Let's see, what can I go with? So let's go with, we'll try to do a little bit of mind reading.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. All right. I was hoping you'd say that. get freaked out real early here.
Exactly. I want you to think of two simple shapes. Okay. You can go bold, go two simple shapes. Now, with my artistic ability, a star and a heart would be considered difficult. Something like a square is more my style. So think of two simple shapes. Don't think of those. Think of two. Okay.
Okay.
So two shapes, just think of them, whatever they may be. I'm thinking of two. You're thinking of two. Let's see how well we can actually connect hundreds and thousands of miles away.
Okay.
So two. I'm trying to see if you're able to pick up what I'm sending you, which is a triangle and a circle. Mm-hmm. How close was I?
Not for me.
No?
Should I tell you what?
Yeah.
I had an octagon.
So an octagon.
Yeah.
Whether or not you would say that's a simple shape or not, it's one thing.
Okay, maybe not.
I had octagon and pentagon.
Again, goes back to simple shapes. So most people would choose a circle and a triangle.
Okay. Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, so there's two things with this that I'll get into. One is most people, the general people, we're all the same. Most of us, depending on training, education levels, things of that nature, we'll think along the same lines. And then there's this exclusion by inclusion. So I tell you to think of two simple shapes. For me, a star and a heart are complicated. So I'm automatically limiting those two shapes.
Okay.
Right. Think of something like a square.
And are those pretty common shapes, and that's why you exclude them?
Exactly. So okay. I'm limiting your choice. So most people would get maybe a rectangle and a circle. Or a lot of people do get the triangle and circle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm using the fact that most people think along the same line. Then also exclusion by inclusion. I tell you things not to think of, then that limits your choices.
So I almost ran a stop sign earlier today, and that's why I had the octagon in my mind. That's probably why that stood out.
Yeah, that's what's that called when you not the planting, but we talked about this a couple weeks ago, where you kind of pre-frame somebody and you start dropping those things, those shapes or whatever, if you wanted to pre-frame somebody.
Right.
So it was interesting because after we said something that didn't match like the normal, you kind of said, well, that's not a simple shape or something like that. Is that also part of the technique that you would use in a show or on in like street to kind of move things when things don't go as planned? Because in business, things don't always go as planned. In marketing, things don't always go as planned.
Right.
So is that like a standard response that you use?
Well, normally I would do this with a much bigger group of people. So I'm in front of an audience of 50, 100, 200 people, my odds increase. One-on-one, two-on-one, my odds are a little reduced.
Right.
When I get 100 people and I do that, and then let's say a third raise their hand. And now this is something else that goes on to where I say, how many thought of a circle and triangle? Let's say a third raises their hand. How many got at least one? Now more people raise their hand because more people get likely one or the other. So now I can turn this little effect that had a third reaction to maybe now it's two thirds.
Right.
And it's even bigger than what it is.
Right. And then there's social proof. And the minority that didn't get one are going to think that, well, maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something wrong with them.
So definitely social proof. We talk about social proof all the time on this show is, you know, one of the classic influence techniques. Mm-hmm. Of course you, in your case, you're doing that after the fact. Is there any way that you like when you're doing, you know, a street magic or a show like that, that you're kind of planting ideas in people that that you're going to ask them to recall later? Is that like a real thing, or is that just TV mentalism, or like what is, let's go there first. Like, what is mentalism? Like how?
So it's a form of magic that deals with like a lot of mind reading. It could be either predictions or telepathy. Some could go clairvoyance, some could go the psychic route. So it's just a genre of magic.
Okay. So it's not, do you think it's more than just like being super observant, like a Sherlock Holmes?
So it could be anything from, I could predict what card you're going to pick to going to the, I can tell you things about yourself.
Okay.
So it just depends on how the performer wants to portray that particular skill that they have.
Okay. Sorry, that was a little bit of a tangent, but that's how these shows go. It's like actually kind of interesting for all of us to learn. So you said you had a 20-minute kind of, show that you says matches the business, what businesses go through. And did you say the sales or marketing cycles? Is that right?
Right. So in a street performance, my show is basically, I attempt to gather a crowd through sound, colors, movement, things of that nature. Try to get a crowd from there, then go into a show. Then once that show is over, I then ask for donations and money. So now if you're trying to introduce a product, you would typically put out social media, some adverts saying, hey, we got this new product coming on the market. It's maybe a new SKU of something, a new variant, and you try to tease it. I'm doing the same thing, teasing the show I'm about to do. Mm-hmm. Then I do the show. During that same time, you're advertising, you're doing your regular email marketing, you're doing your regular social media posts, you're doing your regular radio spots, podcast ads, saying, hey, don't forget, we're here.
Yeah.
We're doing this. You know, reviews are this. And with the reviews, I'm having people applaud and scream and yell. So that's my reviews during a street performance show that you would do for Instagram or Facebook.
Right.
And then get that urgency of, oh, this is really great. I want a part of this. I need to go buy that product or buy that service. Mm-hmm. Whereas at the end, you would then, with all the reviews of the clapping and this built up, you'd then hopefully provide a tip at the end of the show.
Cool. So what have you found like when you're doing street magic? Because that's a hyper competitive environment, right? People are busy. They got their AirPods in. Mm-hmm. Like, and do you still do these or they? Do you still do some just for practice or anything? Or?
I do. Yeah. I did the Busker Fest in San Diego last year. There's a Busker Fest coming up in Indiana in a few months. I'm hoping to be a part of.
Okay. Do you ever come down to South by Southwest here in Austin?
I have not. Nope. Yeah.
Oh, that would be a great venue. Yeah.
New Orleans a few times, but not South by Southwest. No.
Yeah. That's coming up next month here in Austin. But, so do you have like I said, that's a very crowded, very noisy, both literally and figured, metaphorically place, being on the street. Mm-hmm. People got stuff on their minds. They're not expecting to stop and see a show. They're probably going somewhere. How do you interrupt people and get their attention?
So psychology plays a little bit of a role. A crowd will help draw a crowd. So the hardest part of a street show is the first, let's say, five people. Mm-hmm. Because once I get those five people to stop, it's easier to bring in a crowd. So with that, I use the anticipation of the very first trick. And then some street performers will use, hey, stay and watch for the next 5 minutes. I'll get on this unicycle and see it from a straight jacket. They're teasing you with what's to come.
Right.
It is a very humbling and rewarding experience to be a street performer and get people in the middle of their day to stop, watch a show, and then give you money at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's talk about literally cold traffic, right? I mean, sidewalk traffic, stopping their day, getting them to pay attention and then stay long enough actually wait for the appropriate time, to throw money in your hat or whatever you've got. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's like you said, that's a lot to have happen in a 20 minutes. Is that how long the typical street show lasts? Is about 15, 20 minutes or is it less?
So for magic, there's two types of shows. There's one that's called a sidewalk show or a doorway show, which is typically a 10, 15 minute show. from the old days of doing a show on the sidewalk of a street and being in a closed down storefront doorway. Smaller crowd, 5, 10, 15 people in and out, 10, 15 minutes. Then there's what's called a full circle or half circle show. These are typically done by really good street magicians, jugglers, where you get 100 plus people surrounding you and you do a full 45 minute show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just totally impromptu and just,
that's wow. Totally impromptu. You may do your 45 minute show, break for 15, 30 minutes, then do it again.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's interesting. And, you know, Sean, you were saying earlier, it's tougher and tougher this day and age where people have their AirPods, they're walking around with the Beats in and a lot of people are just kind of tuning out the outside noise. So I know that's got to be a challenge. You have to get there in order to get their attention.
And again, it's that psychology of a crowd draws a crowd. So once you get that front line going,
yeah,
you're able to draw in other people
and curious
management as well. Okay, you may have some people standing around. Mm-hmm. And if someone passes by and just sees people standing around,
yeah,
I mean,
it draws. Yeah, it's like
to control them into a crowd, and it looks like something's going on, and you're moving around, you're jumping around, you're being loud, you're moving. People are attracted to that, and they want to see what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, it's like social proof. They're like, okay, you know, they're wondering what's drawing the everyone else in. It's that curiosity. Oh, yeah,
And just from purely logistics, it's obviously easier to notice mm-hmm. 5 people in a group than it is one person in a group, right? Because there's literally more space taken up in your frame of vision, the bigger the crowd gets.
And same thing with like Instagram and Facebook. You may not want to follow that person that has 100 followers, but that same person comes back 2 months later with 1,000+, 10,000+ followers. Oh, maybe I should follow this person.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. And there tends to be that hockey stick curve. Mm-hmm. Like, is there, when you're doing street performance or, you know, one of those things, like, is there, like, you said 5 people is kind of, is that your critical mass? That's where the tipping point happens? Where?
Pretty much.
Okay. That's cool.
And
so let me.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, go ahead, Jonathan. You had a question coming up.
Yeah, I was just going to ask it because I'm looking at your website and you got, like, as it relates to business magic, mm-hmm. You've got three things that you talk about, like imagine, misdirect, and belief. We can touch on each one of those, but I'm just curious. You talk about misdirection. Mm-hmm. So it says magicians may cheat, redirect your attention, and use it's disorganization to create unbelievable magic. Can you give some examples? Cause I'm just curious. That's interesting to me is, using misdirection. And, I know it's used all the time in magic, how that relates to business.
Yeah. So, from a magic standpoint, there's this phrase I've been using a lot lately is, everything communicates. Mm-hmm. And that can be everything from the time, as far as a magic show is concerned, if you're buying tickets to go see a show, let's say it's David Copperfield, you've bought these tickets in advance. So now there's anticipation. Let's say you decide to get dressed up. Now you're more excited. You walk through the lobby, you know, it's ornate, there's buildings you walk in and there's all the lights and everything. All this is communicating to you as a buyer what to expect. And so that helps. So misdirection is kind of a misnomer. We're not misdirecting your attention. We are directing attention.
Sure.
So if I was
you're actually like hyper-focusing attention.
Correct. So if I was to do a coin vanish of taking a coin here and vanishing in this hand, if I want you to look at this hand, I'll look at it as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I may tense it up a little bit. It may be a little bigger than this hand. And that would direct your attention because everything, again, communicates. And the hand that is really hiding the coin will look natural. I won't pay attention to it. I may even like lean in and focus more here mm-hmm. to try to help communicate that there's nothing going on over here to pay attention to.
Right.
So let's say you're giving a business meeting, it's a big presentation, you're trying to pitch something. If you're able to help control as much of the aspects of that as possible, you go in early, you set up the conference room, mm-hmm. You have nameplates out for people that you know are showing up, presentations are already laid out, mm-hmm. The whiteboard's up, your posters are up, your help, because again, everything communicates. So the people are coming in to see the presentation are now have this level of expectation of, oh, well, he knows what's going on. Maybe they've already got an agenda for their meeting. Maybe they've already been sent the slide deck already, so they kind of know what's coming. And then they see you. You're standing there. You already presented. Maybe you're greeting them as they come in. You already know their name. You're already setting this level of expectation rather than you just show up, hey, here's some paper. Let's go through a PowerPoint presentation and I'm done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so funny because as you're talking about that, I remember from my in-home sales days mm-hmm. where I would use some of this stuff where, you know, I was taught, you know, old school in-home sales, the customer wants to put you in the living room, the formal living room or the dining room table. Mm-hmm. And you're always told by your sales manager, you know, you go to the kitchen table because that's where things happen. Right. That's right. Where real decisions are made in most houses is in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Or at the either kitchen bar or the kitchen eat-in kitchen table. So sure. You look for that, you go there, you orchestrate where they're going to sit. Like you point where they're going to sit and you take the head of the table mm-hmm. so that you show you're in charge. And I had this one buddy that we would do some joint sales calls with sometimes. Not joint sales. That was, wasn't legal back then. co-sales.
Right.
And he would get, like, he would take this whole level of, like, authority and rapport just to a whole nother level, like crazy. He would get up in the middle of the presentation while he was doing his pitch mm-hmm. at the kitchen table, and he would get up and he would go to the fridge or the cupboard, and he would say, which cupboard are the glasses in? And he'd grab a glass, he'd get ice out of the freezer. He's like, can I get you anything? And they're like, no, but he was establishing like his authority sure. and his right to be there and all this other stuff. And that's what it reminded me of when you're talking about that, like really taking control. Mm-hmm. I mean, that had nothing to do with the products we were selling, but it communicated everything about his confidence
that he belonged
to
there.
Be there. Yeah.
It was like, no, you belong.
Oh, your family. Like yeah. You're just getting stuff for yourself. You're like getting tea out of the, and if he saw like leftovers in there and it was around lunchtime or dinner, he'd be like, you mind if I heat this up? And they're like,
that's pretty bold.
It is bold, but it worked. And he was able to pull it off because he yeah. was like super nice guy, right. Good smile, so he would do it, but he'd always be smiling. Like he was everybody's best friend. It wasn't like an annoying over the top guy.
And that kind of reminds me of the trick we just started with where I kind of eliminated some things. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing an in-home sales and you need that kitchen table, hey, is there a place we can go? The couch isn't going to work. You know, the living room's not going to work. It's too small. It's too smoky. I need a bigger table. What do you have? And yeah. then, well, what's left really?
Right.
Well, I guess it, dining room table.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Let's go there then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even like I know one of the lines we use similar to that, Nolan, was that if they did try to put us at the dining room table, mm-hmm. it was usually like a nice cherry or, whatever. And I'd be like, I might have to fill out some papers and I don't want to like leave pin marks in your, in your table. Do you right. mind if we go to the Formica kitchen table, basically, like, the more durable table mm-hmm. over there. And they're like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. So now I've also planted in their mind that we're going to be filling out contracts. Mm-hmm. They were filling out paperwork. Like I just dropped it in there real quick. So mm-hmm. when it comes out now, it's not like a total surprise. But boy, I haven't done that in a long time, but back when I was doing home improvement and all that kind of stuff, that was, that's part of what we did. So yeah. So what are some other, how would you apply that, Nolan, online? Like in today's world, how do you like direct people's attention? I don't know if you're familiar with just basic sales funnels, going from an ad to mm-hmm. email squeeze page, to whatever. Anything you thought about there? I don't know what areas you consult in the most, but just curious your thoughts.
So most of my consultants are smaller companies that are trying to grow. We're doing pitch decks, we're doing business plans. They're one or two person type in businesses and they're trying to grow and bring in more employees and increase their sales. Mm-hmm. As far as online, again, it's the way you would advertise a new product, new service, or an existing product or service, the same way I would think where I am in the show. So again, if you have a new product coming out, you want to you want to tease it. Hey, there's a new product coming out, new service coming out. It's being revealed February 27th. Make sure you come back, visit us. Whereas I'm trying to hype up the show. Hey, there's this big thing I'm going to jump on in the next 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to take 2 minutes. This is the best show. It's been reviewed, whatever. Now, once the show is going and once your product's been out for a while and you're getting those reviews, your marketing then becomes, hey, don't forget about us. We had these great reviews.
Right.
Yeah.
No, we got 100,000 reviews. Why don't you just come see what we're about? Same thing in the Magic Show. People are applauding. Why don't you come and see what the show's about? And then as you get towards the end and your product's more mature, it's that reminder of, hey, we're still here. We're a loyal company. You're a loyal customer. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves us. We haven't forgotten about you as a person who's come by and purchased our product. Mm-hmm. So same thing as throughout the show, you've willing to give your money over for such a great job of the show that I did. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah,
it does. Absolutely. So also on your side, the page that Jonathan was talking about, you have the word belief there and you say words matter. Mm-hmm. And magicians are very good at using those words to direct conversation, empower audiences and have them believe in us, magic and themselves. I really resonate with that as a copywriter.
Yeah.
So, but I'm curious your take on that. Like, how would you kind of expand that out and tell us more about that?
So as far as words matter, as far as one of the examples, if we were to do a simple card trick, I would have a fan of cards. I'd say, go ahead and take a card. Now I may say take a card, I may say pick a card. So those two words, granted one word within the whole pattern, mean different things. If I say pick one, you may actually go through and try to pick one particular card out and take it. Mm-hmm. If I need you to take a certain card for whatever trick I'm trying to do, I might say, just help me take one. Now, because most humans are simple and easy and our brains are very simple, it's easier for me to get you to do what I want you to and take a certain card if I say, just help me take one. And I may have one card shown more than the rest of them.
Okay.
So you may go for the easy pick card or the one that's shown more, the easiest one to grab, rather than pick a card, which one? Mm-hmm. So again, just one word within several sentences can change the outcome of what I want you to do as far as picking a card or taking a particular card.
Yeah, and you kind of alluded there also that the pace at which you would say it would be different.
Yeah, I hurry you up. Most people, especially when they come up on stage or in front of an audience, they get rushed. They don't know what to do. And we magicians have used that to our advantage. A lot of times, Sean, if I was to ask you to name a color, just name a color out loud.
Blue.
Most people would either choose red or blue just because red is one syllable. It's easy to pronounce. If you're up on stage, name a color, red. The second choice would be blue. So most magicians would have some sort of way of revealing either red and or blue.
Right.
Most people in that moment are going to go with pumpernickel red. Yeah.
Right. Cause they're being watched. I probably pick blue cause your wall behind you looks blue on my computer. So that's probably where that came from. But so you just mentioned something there kind of in passing that said they might have two ways to reveal. Mm-hmm. So is that a pretty standard practice and how does that apply to business? Like, do you have those two envelopes that one is hidden somewhere and so you can go either direction?
So I'm not going through all the techniques that
I know you can't reveal everything without.
but knowing that, but understanding human behavior and what people are most likely going to say or do, mm-hmm. and use that to your advantage of sales or trying to market, of knowing people are either going to, In A and B test for marketing, it's a perfect example. You may go ultra luxury for this ad and then ultra conservative or ultra urban in one ad.
Right. Because
people, depending on how they are, may go for either one.
Right.
And throughout testing, you can get back stats saying, hey, this luxury ad hits more than the urban ad, so we'll pursue that. Mm-hmm. Okay. If I do the red and blue trick for every show for a year, most people say red, I'm more likely to just probably go with red. If you say blue, I'll have a way to divert and cover the blue. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you come in and you want the urban ad, I will still have a way to show you that demo that product in that environment and still make that sell.
So my brain is trying to figure out like stuff. So I'm like, why do people pick red? And I'm thinking like a lot of rooms where you would do magic, I would think are more likely to have red in them than blue. I don't know if that, like your surroundings, I don't know if that affects people or if it's just the simplicity of the word.
Do you intentionally set the stage for people to, I mean, is that part of it? Setting the stage for people to choose one of the two? By using, like Sean said, background colors or surrounding colors within that.
There are some people that do that. They're very hyper aware. And again, it goes back to that thing of everything communicates.
Right.
I'm aware, you know, it's a certain color tie, certain hand gestures, that circle and triangle trick from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Some people will go through the routine and have their hands like this. So just think of a simple shape, any shape you want, just maybe put it inside of one another and just using that psychology of this is a triangle inside of another shape.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, that's a circle. Oh, and they may just not follow the shape, triangle and circle.
Yeah.
Or if I want you to pick a particular card, if I have two cards, I may have one a little higher than the other one.
Yeah. Or a little so, closer to you than me. So you want to pick, because they're going to naturally grab the one that's up top normally, right?
Because again, it's easier. They don't have to reach past it to get closer to me. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're doing a demo of different products and if you want the participant to pick your product, knowing how people behave, mm-hmm. you could place it in that, you know, that mystery hidden space of this one and they pick it.
Yeah.
For example,
Well, Jonathan, you and I both have sold, you know, off of legal pads for years, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and if you're doing a proposal, you usually give people three choices, hoping they'll pick the one in the middle.
Yep.
Right. You do a high, low, and then the one you really want.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is stuff I know you and I, Jonathan, have been doing for years in sales.
Yep.
And I think some people listening might be like, well, that's kind of manipulative and tricky. And so I'll throw that back to you, Nolan. Like when, I got to think that when you give a presentation like this to a company and you kind of compare it to magic and those things, that you get some of that kind of pushback that's like, well, that's kind of manipulative, kind of tricky. How do you, I know what I would say to that, but I'm curious what you would say to that.
So I'm not here to deceive the person you're trying to sell to or to deceive the audience as far as in business in magic, in my theater, that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if you can also reveal the truth to them that they already assume it's not real, then it becomes magical. So if your product of the three of the five is the most durable, is the best price, is most valuable, whatever, and you can then prove it to them because they pick it.
Mm-hmm.
Now they picked it at their own free choice. It may have been in a spot where they were going to pick it anyways. And you reveal the truth to them of it is the most valuable of these products. It has most value added. It's most durable or whatever. And now they picked it and you reveal the truth to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just say this real quick, Jonathan. I've always thought that like people are so skeptical today and so hyper skeptical and they're putting up such walls that you almost have to use some of this stuff just to get past the defenses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's more like, to me, I see it as more like leveling the playing field than it is like misleading or cheating, as long as you have a good product, good service and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
That's how I see it. So I like the fact that, you know, being very clear on what you're communicating and very intentional about how you set the room, if you're doing a sales presentation or how you design your website, you know, so when the visitor comes to it, they get a certain, you know, that's all branding is, right? It's you're communicating a certain feel with your branding, depending on the font colors, you know, and all that stuff. Jonathan, you were going to say something?
Yeah. Yeah. So I noticed you're in your background, you have Marines. Are you prior military?
Yeah, I still serve. I'm 17 years in.
Awesome. Cool.
Wow.
So what's the retirement?
So yeah, we're all three vets on here, and that's cool. There's a lot of takeaways from military using stuff like that. You know, you call it, you know, we talk misdirection, and you know, in military, we call it, you know, it's deceiving. It's tricking the enemy, but it's oftentimes, you know, it's, you know, some of these words are, can be criticized, but they're often, you know, in use for the right reasons for to gain the advantage, or sometimes mm-hmm. looked at in a different way. So I'm just saying, you know, that's, I'm sure a lot of these strategies and things like that, that you use, there's some, probably some takeaways from military strategy and things like that, that you can incorporate and say, you know, this is what we do every day, you know, when it comes to fooling the enemy. I mean, I've read so many, I love reading a lot of these old enemy or these war books and military history books of how we, back in World War II and the Korean War, how we use deception to trick our enemy, you know, to thinking.
The ghost armies.
Yeah, ghost armies, fake military bases, all these things, like redirection. Yeah. I mean, it's like that was part of it, you know, to gain the upper hand. So, you know, it's really all about how you view it.
So, Nolan, we're getting close on our time and we're getting low on beer and you're getting low on tequila. So it means the show's getting close to wrapping. So I want to give you kind of the last word just about, if you're kind of coming in and consulting somebody, you know, in the marketing space, most of our listeners are in some type of sales, marketing, maybe have a small business, things like that. What's kind of your top one or two takeaways from your years of crossing this whole idea of magic and your studies in business and consulting and all these things? What's your big, you know, piece of wisdom you could drop on the listeners?
So the last two, which I was thinking of, backwards plan and inspire. A lot of times magicians never have this crazy idea or this effect that we wanted to accomplish. A lot of times there may not be a way to actually do it. So we come up with this idea of, I'm going to make Statue of Liberty vanish. Mm-hmm. Well, now we have to backwards plan. So if your goal is, if it's a realistic goal of, you know, maybe 100,000 units sold this month. Well, how does that happen?
Yeah.
Backwards plan from there. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of times whenever we're trying to create an effect, there may be a piece missing that we need that we won't discover for another year, 2 years. We may have to go out and visit a friend that who does illusions or who works with cars. Mm-hmm. So having a creative group around you to backwards plan from, saying, hey, here's my idea. Here's my goal. I want to sell so many units. I want to have so many SKUs. What's the best way to go about this? And then table that discussion with a group of people. You know, now it's so many a month. Well, how do we get that per month? Or is it seasonal growth? Well, you know, summertime's going to be slower, wintertime's going to be better. How do we average that out? So really backwards plan, rather than just, I want to sell 5,000 units next month.
Yeah.
Well, what does that lead to? So short-term goals aren't always necessarily the best. Mm-hmm. Then the second thing would be to inspire. Magicians are very good about inspiring our audience. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you had the ability to be a magician, what would it be? I'm up there, I'm presenting whatever effects or illusions that I'm doing, hopefully to inspire you, that childlike wonder that most of us had growing up. Wow, the car just vanished. Wow, how did he know that I was thinking this? How did he know I was going to pick this card? No, so we try to inspire people to think beyond their everyday lives. And I think a lot of people say really need it and they really enjoy that. So if you're able to inspire your customer, person you're selling to, inspire that there's something more than just what's out there now. It's this product. It's our company. It's our service. Think of if you had all this time, like if you save all this money, what would you do with it? So it's that inspiration that we provide to our audience that you can provide to your customer, your clients or whomever.
I love that. I mean, that's like, I think, if we could just inspire more awe and wonder in our customers, that would go such a long ways.
Oh yeah.
So that's a really, really good point. And very few companies do that well. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of room for improvement. It's a great way to set yourself apart for sure.
And the ones that do are doing very well.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You know, I think of Disney and I think of Apple with their packaging and, you know, some other companies, you know, stuff like that. So Well, good stuff. We've got another guest coming on shortly, Nolan, so we're going to have to buzz off. But how can people find out more about you? What's the best place for them to learn more about you and what you do?
Yeah, the website, nolanwebster.com, N-O-L-A-N, Webster, like the dictionary.
Okay. Any particular thing on there or just...
Nope.
Just
click around.
There's go there videos, and click around.
There's,
yeah. All right.
Yeah, well, be sure. Yo, we'll post that on our show page. And once we publish this, so people can link back to it and find out a little more. But people can get on there, read your testimonials, look at some of your clients, and also some of your upcoming shows. So
yeah.
You can check that out. Again, nolanwebster.com. Nolan, thanks for coming on with us. We enjoyed it, man. It's been fun.